Good evening, everybody. It's your boy, Big Dave Martell, here in another episode of The Bog every single Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel that you should like, subscribe, share, click the little alert button so you can alert every time we go live, like I said, is every single Thursday, or whenever I do my other content, live streams and all that good stuff. Tonight, we have a very, very awesome guest, one of my colleagues from the Neurona Society. But before we introduce him, we're going to get a shout-out to my homegirl, Miss Hannah, at Traditional Apothecary, traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Stop giving your money to the multinational globalist vampires that hate your guts, sell you poison, plastic, synthetics, trashes your hair, trashes your body, trashes your skin. Give your money to somebody that loves you, man. Support folk economy. Support folk economy. So go over to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com and type in promo code Dave to get 10% off. Let me unmute him here. We have tonight to talk about ancestral diets in from a scientific standpoint, from a lore standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, from all different ways and how we can improve our modern diet because our modern diet is so terrible, which we're going to talk about tonight. So without further ado, my good friend and colleague, the folkish farmer, how are we doing tonight, sir?
Good. How are you doing tonight, Dave?
I am excellent. So let's get right into it here. You are a guy that you focus very, very heavily. You live there in the Appalachia region, which you are part of a very large, very awesome kindred down there. You are a colleague of mine over in Neurona Society, and you are part of the diet and the nature circle, and you focus very primarily on, like diet and living better and lifestyle and stuff like that. And let's get started. I wanted to give you the floor tonight. I know you got a lot to say, so we're going to get right into it. So what is so bad about our modern diet, and how does it compare to our old diet? And let's just tell us about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, to kind of start this off, I mean, if you look at a lot of our lore and a lot of our, ancient writings, a lot of what our ancestors did was procure food. If you look at some of the stories, for example, our ancestors went to a lot of extent to actually, describe things like what was Thor carrying in his bag. He was carrying herring and goat meat and just the connection between his goats. And, every night he killed the goats and he ate the goats. And one of my favorite stories from the lore is that, Thor, rolls in and there's two children there. And he says, you can eat all the meat you want. You can have your fill of the goat meat, but don't snap the bones and don't eat the marrow from them. Of course, what do? They eat the marrow. And why is that so important? You have to look at a deeper context of why that was important, because when you look at bone marrow, that's one of the most nutritious things from the meat or the animal itself. Uh-huh. So you have this connection in the lore, and there's numerous stories about this. And, we've lost this from our modern diet. You can't roll into Chick-fil-A or any other fast food restaurant and say, I'd like a side of bone marrow with some bone broth. It just doesn't happen. Yeah. And our ancestors were very keen on this. And there's a real scientific reason for that. Not only that, there's also a really good reason as to why you want to utilize every part of the animal. There should be no waste. When you go to the grocery store today, what do you see? Well, you see skinless, boneless breast meat.
Yeah.
And that's, and it's so funny because that, it's probably like $5-6 a pound. If you're buying organic, it could be a little bit less if you're getting, the crappier versions and things like that. So when you look at what our ancestors would do, let's say with a chicken, they would roast the chicken. They would eat their fill. Typically they would eat the wings and the, breast meat. Then they would take, they would eat the wings and then they would eat the legs. And then they would take the breast meat, chop that out, throw the bones into a stock pot, cook that down at night, and guess what? The next day you had chicken soup.
Now, isn't chicken a Middle Eastern or an African animal? Were chickens native to Europe at that time?
They actually were coming into Europe, but you don't have to look at it necessarily as a chicken. You could have looked at it as a grouse or a squab or any of those type of birds. So when I say chicken, it's really, any type of fowl, whether that was a duck, goose. I guess if you were in Iceland, you have the, puffin. Yes. You have the puffin, various types of fowl. And what our ancestors would do with these fowl is that once they would procure the fowl, they would take the bones and everything, and they would cook these bones down. That's another thing that our ancestors were really big on, was keeping a, you know, quote unquote cauldron going. So the stock pot. Sure. The stock pot was very important to our ancestors, and it should be important to us today. And unfortunately, it's not. One of the things that I keep going pretty much throughout the week is a stock pot. And so I always buy whole animals, like if I'm buying chicken or duck or pheasant, if I shoot a pheasant or a quail or anything like that, I take all the bones and I gather them up after we've had our fill of the meat, and then I throw them into the stock pot. And what you find from this is that there's a lot of nutritional value that's inside the bone marrow. For example, inside of bone marrow itself, I mean, you've got a couple of grams of protein, you've got vitamin B12, you've got riboflavin, iron, vitamin E, phosphorus, thiamine, vitamin A, so on. And that was very important to our ancestors. I mean, where were they going to procure these vitamins from? It's not like they could have went to a GNC or some, you know, sporting place and procured these vitamins. So it was super important for us to get the most nutrition out of the animal. And today in our modern diet, we're only getting the protein from, quote unquote, the breast meat, or maybe you've got some chicken wings or something like that. So that's one thing that you have to really look at, is what did they actually do with the animal? There was no waste. I was in Japan for a couple of months, and that's one thing that I noticed in Japanese culture, is there is no waste. They eat everything. And our ancestors ate everything too, from the livers to the kidneys to the heart. And they all have different macro and micronutrients to them. And we're missing that from our diets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, so right now, a lot of people,
sorry about that, folks. My computer crashed. There we go.
Okay.
All right. I'm very sorry about that, Mr. Farmer. Technical difficulties, like always. Technology is a nightmare. So anyway, what you were saying was about how you were over in Japan, and they used all of the animal and all the nutrients from all of the different parts of the animal, and they didn't waste anything. And our ancestors also didn't waste anything.
No, our ancestors didn't waste anything, and there's really no reason to waste anything. For example, if I was just to give you, you know, just a basic nutritional breakdown of what's in a liver, and this is, you know, very similar for chicken liver, beef liver, you know, various types of liver. It's about 3,460% of the vitamin B12 you need for the day. Vitamin A is about 1,000%. Vitamin B2, about 260%, folate, 65% iron, 80% copper, about 1,620. You can see how nutritious that this just one little piece of the animal is. And unfortunately today in a lot of our society, it's just discarded. In the South, we still, you know, do eat a decent amount of fried chicken liver, which is not exactly the best thing for you. But, you know, at least in Southern culture, they have kept the liver alive, I guess to say.
Yeah, sure.
But that goes for the kidneys, and that goes for the heart, the tongue, the brains as well. One thing that when I was a kid growing up, my great-grandfather absolutely loved something called squirrel brains and eggs. And it's extremely nutritious. It doesn't taste as bad as you may think. And these are things that we've lost through our culture. Now in our modern society, like I said, you can't go through the drive-thru and get Scrabble. You know, you can't go through the drive-thru and get these kind of nutritional parts of the animal, and it's all been relegated down to how can a company make as much money as they can. And unfortunately, procuring things like liver and kidneys and things like that is not profitable. It really isn't. If you go to the grocery store today, you can get a pound of chicken livers for a little of nothing. Our ancestors would have probably killed each other for a pound of liver because they knew the nutritional value in that. It also goes for, you know, the bones and the skin on the animal and various things like that. So like I was saying, in Japan, you would go and you would have a soup with an eyeball floating in it. And while that may seem extremely disgusting, it's actually very nutritious. And in their modern society, we think things are disgusting. And it's very unfortunate because it's actually very nutritious. Our ancestors wouldn't have batted an eye at eating an eyeball, especially on a fish or something like that. All this kind of things are woven through our lore as well. They talk about, you know, like I said before, with the story about Thor and the goats. And that kind of leads me into another thing. Why do we not eat goat? Why in America do we not eat goat? There's certainly a lot of goats roaming around here, especially in the South. There's goats everywhere. Why do we not eat goat?
I'm not sure at all. And in fact, you mentioned about the innards thing. You know, I grew up in Pennsylvania where we eat those kinds of things. You know, everybody's been to Pennsylvania, had breakfast out here, has had scrapple. That is, that is all the inside parts, all ground up and turned into something that you slice and fry, and it's delicious. I will fight anybody that says it's not. But we eat that kind of stuff. We don't care. In fact, one of my favorite things growing up was chicken hearts. We take chicken hearts, we fry them up because they're cheap. It's like, what, you know, 50 cents, 99 cents a pound or something like that. It's like nothing. And you get these chicken hearts, and they're delicious. So when I met my wife and I went out to meet my wife's family, who are from New Jersey, Thanksgiving dinner was shocking to me that they took all of the insides, all the organs from the turkey, and threw them out.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
You know, I mean, we still have some of this tradition in the South. At least I can say that. I mean, as far as the gizzards, the throat, that kind of thing, we would at least make gravy out of it, for God's sakes. Yeah. I mean, we would still keep that, you know, and cook it down with some onions and, you know, put a little flour and milk or, you know, heavy whipping cream or make, you know, some type of gravy out of it. But, you know, in our modern diet, we've lost all that. We've lost the diversity in all of our food. If you go to the grocery store.
Could you do me a quick favor? Could you move to your left maybe a hair? There we go. That's good. That's good.
Okay. Like I said, when you go to the grocery store, you really are looking at three types of meat. You have pork, beef, and chicken. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, you can find lamb. Occasionally, you can find, you know, turkey and things like this outside of, you know, obviously Thanksgiving. Like right now, you can procure turkey very easily. But our diets have become essentially a corporate diet. Whatever is best for the corporation. If you look at just the diversity in, let's say, something like chicken, there's thousands of breeds of chicken, but we really only eat two breeds of chicken, and they're actually bred to where the breasts are bigger. That's not the way a chicken was meant to be. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of days our food are coming from kaffirs, and if people aren't familiar with that, it's a confined, managed food lot, essentially. And so you have hundreds, if not thousands, of animals all piled on top of each other, eating out of a trough. Now, I hate to say this, but defecating on each other. This is not good for the animal's health, and it eventually is not good for our health. The diseases are off the chart, so what do? They pump them full of hormones and antibiotics. Well, guess what? You get to eat those as well. So my thing is why do we do this? We know it's bad for us. Everyone knows it's bad, but yet we still do it. We still eat it. In addition to this, when you look at the way we cook food, especially in the South, most of the time it's just fried. There's virtually no nutritional value in frying food. We don't slow cook things. We don't take the time to, like I said, make the broths, to cook out the marrow, to do these things. And that's real, where the real nutritional value is in our food. And it's really sad. It really is.
So talking about how bad our modern diet is, and we all know, man, we're all guilty of it too. You mentioned Chick-fil-A earlier. I love Chick-fil-A. I'm not the spicy chicken deluxe Chick-fil-A sauce is delicious. You know what I mean? My diet is not great. Like I love pizza. I love chicken. I love burgers. Like, you know, I love to eat. I'm a grown man, and I like to eat that stuff. Calzones, I tear that stuff up, but I know that in the back of my head that it's not good for me, and I could do a better job, and we're all guilty of it. Man, I know even people that are really big into fitness and diet and stuff still are buying these like chicken breasts and stuff like that from the grocery store, which are bad for us, and also it's not fiscally sound. It's not economically sound for the household that you're spending all this money on these like boneless, skinless chicken breasts. We could just buy the whole bird and just do it all yourself and debone it and do it all yourself. So, moving into our ancestral diet and stuff like that, what are some ingredients that we can start incorporating into our diet, and how do we go about doing and getting out of the wolf age clown world? You know, consumers' garbage diet, and get back into our primordial diet.
Well, I think one of the easiest things to do is, you know, we need to look at procuring the whole animal. And this is actually a lot easier than you think. I work a professional job. I am not, even though, hence my handle, I am not actually a farmer. I am a hobby farmer kind of thing. You know, I work a 9-to-5, probably like just everybody else. And one of the things that I do is I actually go to farmers and I procure my meat. And in doing so, I can tell the butcher exactly how I want that meat cut. Which means I want the bone in. I want all the organs. I want the tongue. I want the brains. I want everything that can legally be procured from the animal. And that's something that I want you to remind me of here in just a minute about some of the laws around food. Because that's another thing that has really been devastating to our diets is the law. For example, why can't we eat horse? In the United States, why can we not get horse meat? You can certainly get it in Europe. And this really has to do with the Christian culture, you know, when the conversion was going on between paganism and Christianity, one of the things that the Christians really wanted to stomp out was eating of horse because it was such a ritualistic, sacred meal to our ancestors. And right now, do you know what most of our horse meat goes to in the United States?
Where's that?
Dog food. If it's not dog food, it's glue or it's exported.
So sending the horse that breaks its leg at the race, sending it to the glue factory isn't just a meme. They actually do that.
Yeah, that actually happens, and it's really sad. I've had horse meat. I love it. I think it's great. It tastes very similar to beef, in my opinion. It is a leaner meat, so it does take a little bit more time to cook down than a cow would because there's not as much fat on it, but there's no sense for us to waste this kind of meat. I mean, I'll eat horse. Why does my dog get horse, but I don't? Yeah. That doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, it's really stupid. And that's some of the things that Christianity has overlaid onto our society, that eating the horse was bad. Yes, a horse is a sacred animal, and it is a majestic animal. I'm not going to lie to you on that. And, you know, we should have reverence for all animals. But I think what's worse is taking a bunch of cows and rounding them up and putting them into a big, huge, confined area, full, putting them full of antibiotics and feeding them and overfeeding them, not giving them any space to move. Well, at least the horse probably got to roam around a little bit. Maybe it got to race a little bit. It probably lived a better life than most of the beef that we eat.
Yeah.
So, a lot of that does come from religion. And, that's some things that I really wish that our society would, kind of work itself through and say, hey, there's nothing wrong with eating horse meat. There's really not.
So what are some examples of, you mentioned horse, and you mentioned procuring the animal in a proper way, more ancestral way, which would be using more of the parts. What are some things that we should cut out? I know a lot of people are on this big gluten kick to get rid of bread and like stuff like that and get on to more just like meat and vegetables. What did a diet look for one of our ancestors, maybe in the Bronze Age or the Iron Age or of the ancient past? What did our ancestors of yesteryear, what did their diet look like?
Well, if you look at Northern European society, specifically continental Germany, it was a lot of root vegetables, a lot of cabbage-based kind of things, and then a lot of meat and a lot of fish as well. Fish was extremely important, and it should be something that everyone includes in their diet today. Fish is very high in omega-3, omega-6, and omega-9 ratio. That is linked to cognitive and brain development. So that is super important. It's also linked to being able to regenerate a lot of things, especially around heart disease and so on. So fish is something that we've really lost out of our diet. I know a lot of people in this area that just snarl their nose at fish. I eat pickled herring all the time, and I know that may sound disgusting to people, but it's actually very good. If you've not had pickled herring, you should really try it. You can get it at a lot of grocery stores. Even our grocery stores here in the South have pickled herring. Trout is easy to procure in this area. All you have to do is go fishing for it, right? And that kind of leads me to another subject. Hunting has fell out of favor. You have a lot of people that are saying, oh, well, you should leave the deer alone. And, oh, my God, you're killing an animal. Well, guess what? That's a free range animal. How much more organic can you get than going outside and shooting a deer? And when I kill a deer, I have a lot of feelings for that deer. I really do. it's sustaining me. It's going to become a part of me. So I look at that deer and I say, wow, you know, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, this is part of Earth giving to me. That deer led a wonderful life up until the point I shot and killed it. It was never confined. It was never tortured. It was never given antibiotics. It was taken from its natural environment. And when you kill an animal in the wild, you get to skin it out. You get to procure, you know, the hide if you know how to tan it. Unfortunately, I don't, but someone in their kindred does. So, you know, we give him all the hides and, you know, he knows what to do with it and he can tan the hides and things like that. We keep all the organ meat. We keep, you know, the bone into the meat. We get more out of that animal than what you're going to get from the grocery store. You know, if you kill a big buck that weighs, you know, 125 pounds, you probably can get about 75, 80 pounds of meat off that thing. Mm-hmm. And when you think about 75, 80 pounds of meat, how much would that cost in the grocery store? And
hundreds
we don't think
dollars.
About hundreds of dollars. Exactly. And we don't think about that. Plus, hunting is something that was part of our culture. And especially in the South, you know, I remember as a kid growing up, the opening day of deer season, there was nobody in school. Everybody was out hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that's really become lost. I seen a recent study that was done by the TWRA, the Tennessee Wildlife Authority. There are more deer in Tennessee now than when the settlers were here, because we have a perfect environment for them. We have nice golf courses that are manicured for them to go eat on. We have nice subdivisions with this pristine grass for them to go eat on, and nobody's shooting them. Nobody is going out hunting them. So the deer are actually overpopulated, and I always laugh. One of the biggest advocates for hunting is actually the auto insurance companies. They're out there, you know, lobbying Congress, or at least state Congresses and things like that, to extend the hunting season. And I always laugh about that because, I mean, think about it, in the interest of the auto industry or the auto insurance companies, when you think about it, you know, deer run out in front of cars. They kill people. You know, if they were more contained and, you know, they were hunted, they would be further up in the mountains and not on the interstates where it's easy for them to just roam around. Another thing, too, there's more bear in this area than there's ever been. People do not hunt bear here anymore. A bear, at least we have small black bears in this area, so they're going to range 300, 400, 500 pounds, somewhere around in that area.
Still a
big
animal.
That's a lot. It's a big animal, but that's a lot of meat. Think about 300 pounds of meat in your refrigerator. That's literally, you know, half of a yearling cow in your refrigerator. And you took that from nature. It ate a wild and natural diet. And you're getting all of the benefits of that wild, natural diet. And that's super important to us as well. One thing that I always laugh about when I go to the supermarket and I see that the chicken was vegetarian fed. Well, I don't want my chicken vegetarian fed. I want it to eat worms, bugs, you know, all of that stuff. Because they're not vegetarians. In the wild, if you threw out a couple of bugs and you threw some, I don't know, flaxseed or corn on the other side, they will kill each other to go eat the worms and the bugs before they go eat the flax and the corn or whatever else you throw at it. I mean, I've seen it. I had chickens. So, you know, it kind of cracks me up. And one of the things that I think that we need to get back to in a society, and this is something that, you know, our kindred does, we do a hunt each year. And it's a bonding time. It's a fun time. But, you know, obviously our goal is to kill animals, skin them out, and procure meat. And that's something that I think that we really need to get back to is hunting and getting back into nature. It's something that's completely fell out of favor. It's very unfortunate as well. You know, you see all kinds of advertisements for these things like Beyond Meat and stuff like that. Well, I don't want vegetarian hamburger. If I want a hamburger, I'll go kill a cow.
Yeah.
You know? And there is so much more nutrients in wild game than there is in domestic game. And this is something that, you know, we have really got to change as a society.
So speaking of that, though, one of the problems that we have is we have a lot of people that need to be fed in, you know, the modern world. If everybody just started hunting, I think, you know, that would be too many people hunting. What do you think about that dilemma? Do you think that everybody should go out hunting, or do you think that this is just something for our folk to start doing and adding to our diet and just let all the, you know, riffraff have whatever, you know, garbage they want?
Well, here's the thing that I actually think about this. I think that as much as I, you know, I'm an advocate for hunting, I'm only one voice out here. And I think this is something more for our folk, to be quite honest with you. I don't think you're going to get globalists that are into this vegetarian and vegan movement or anything. We're never going to convince them that this is nutritious. Yeah. We're never going to convince them that this is a good thing. And in my opinion, I could care less. If you want to eat a bunch of apples and vegetables or whatever, good, go for it. I don't care. But I know deep down inside it's not good for you. And like I said, I could care less. To me, those people are cannon fodder. Sorry.
Yeah. So speaking of how we can go out and get hunting, and our ancestors absolutely hunted, what are some things that maybe you mentioned fish earlier? What are some other things that maybe weren't included in our diet nowadays at all? Like, I know that a lot of times our ancestors were really big on, you know, they had a lot of fruit trees and stuff like that. They ate a lot of plums. Yep. And stuff like that. And you know, you mentioned fish, like, you know, yeah, I try to include fish as much as possible. And as Mr. Farmer mentioned earlier, trout. Man, there's, what is it called, the steelhead trout or something like that? It's almost like a salmon. Yeah, I mean, there's fish out there that are just absolutely delicious, that are really, you know, really cheap. And you could go out. How much does it cost to go out and go fishing? Nothing. It's
virtually nothing. I mean, you need a pole and some bait, you know, and your bait can be as simple as going outside when it rains and picking up some worms, or you can get as fancy as tying your own flies. And this really goes back into hunting, because if you're an avid hunter, and a couple of weeks ago, my brother and I and a couple of friends and stuff, we went out and shot quail, pheasant, dove, you know, various birds. We take those feathers. We then take the feathers, put them in the freezer, and when it's time to tie flies, we make flies with the feathers. So you're looking at a complete cycle, and that's the way our ancestors looked at it. Nothing goes to waste on these animals. There is nothing that goes to waste on an animal. All the way down to the feathers, if you look at a male pheasant, so, you know, the cock, it has so many beautiful colors, and those are wonderful to tie flies with. So, you know, in the fall and in the wintertime, you're hunting these animals, and then in the springtime, you're, you know, catching fish with the same feathers or fur or whatever that you procured in the wintertime. And it's just this wonderful cycle and this big circle of life. So it is really cheap to go fishing, and fishing really is kind of the entry into procuring your own food. It really is. It's the easiest to get into. It doesn't take a lot of skill, to be quite honest with you. Yes, fly fishing and becoming, you know, great and wonderful at it and stuff like that, yes, it does take a lot of skill. But simple bait fishing, where you take a hook and put a worm on it and throw it out there with a bobber, you know, it doesn't take a lot of, you know, it doesn't take a lot of skill, and it's fun. You know, yeah. I mean, that's something you can do with your friends. It's easy. It's simple. And that's another thing. We have lost this bonding to our food. Our ancestors used to go out in big hunting parties, and I could only imagine that, you know, all the guys would go out, they'd have a couple of beers, you know, after they shot the animals and they were skinning them out, they would take the prized meat that would spoil, you know, faster. They would cook that night, have huge feasts. We just really lost that in our culture, and that's something that I really want to bring back.
It's really a shame that we've lost so much. And this is, you know, you mentioned this earlier, this is a part that we really overlook, is something as simple as our diet. I mean, it seems simple, but, it, you know, you mentioned earlier, how often do you eat a day? You know, you eat every single day. You know, we talk about philosophy and ritual and, like, all of these wonder metaphysics, and, you know, those things are all tremendous. Those things are all wonderful. I do countless shows about them, but they're not as integral and practical as something like your diet, which is something that we overlook, that we need to really, in our transformation as a folk, in our spiritual transformation, we need to look at all aspects of our being and all aspects of our lifestyle and really try to immerse ourselves in the primordial path. And as Mr. Farmer's talking about, this includes, you know, hunting, you know, procuring our food in a more authentic fashion, because A, it is part of the primordial path. It is trying to become more authentic with our ancestral way. But it's also, it's cheaper, it's easier on the wallet, and it's good for you. It's good for your body. You know what I mean? And all of these things are absolutely necessary. So talk about procuring your own meat, and like once you have your meat, what are some, like, maybe some foods that we need to get rid of? Yeah, I mean, what do we need to get rid of? What needs to go in the garbage?
Well, I think the first thing that needs to go in the garbage is this whole concept of lean meat that has no skin, has no bones, this kind of thing. I actually have a note right here. If you were to buy a boneless chicken breast, and this is not organic, it would sell for about $3.50, $4 a pound. If you buy a whole chicken, it would cost you about $1.25 a pound.
Wow.
So think about that.
That's like half the money.
Why we're saving money by, you know, having two, three meals off this chicken if you procure it whole versus buying just the skinned out breast part. And it doesn't make any sense to me. It really doesn't.
Yeah, and deboning an animal, like deboning a chicken, is a really necessary skill. If you ever get into cooking or anything, one of the first things that you learn is how to debone a bird or how to skin and fillet a fish and butcher an animal and stuff like that. These are life skills that we don't, you know, the boomers all moan about how we don't know how to change a tire and stuff like that. Well, you know, for three generations we've forgotten how to skin and gut an animal, field dress an animal. So that's, you know, that's something that we need to introduce as well. But as far as like actual food, like what about like grains or bread? Do we need to get rid of bread? Because people didn't tell me I need to get rid of pasta, and it's like I'm looking for a reason not to get rid of pasta. Is it killing me?
So I think the biggest problem with this is actually the grain itself. When you look at the grains that are grown now, we do not have the ancient grains. Yes, you can go to Whole Foods or Earth Fair, these organic markets, and you can still buy them for five times the cost of white flour, right? Yeah. So they're available out there. For example, barley. You can buy barley, and it's good for you, you know. But I think the problem is, to be honest with you, when you take something, you bleach it, it's got bromades in it, various things to preserve it. That's what I think is destroying us.
What is a bromade?
It's what they use, if I'm not mistaken, to whiten the flour. I could be wrong on this, but there's all kinds of chemicals that are added to the flour, like anti-caking agents and things like this.
Wow.
You know, we don't need this in our foods. So when you're talking about grains and stuff like that, our ancestors certainly ate breads. But if you're familiar with a lot of the breads that are made in Germany this day, they're multi-grains. There's several grains that are in this bread. So it's not just white flour. Mm. And when you go to buy a loaf of bread today, it's white flour. Our ancestors did not have this type of wheat, and that's part of the problem as well. Our wheat now is grown specifically so the tractor can come through, cut the wheat at a specific height, throw it in the back of the trailer, and move on. And, you know, those tractors can, you know, cut several acres in a few hours. Our ancestors went out with scythes and cut the fields, and that's how we actually get the term an acre. An acre was how much one man could cut with a scythe in one day. Was an acre.
Really?
So think about that. So that was how we judged, you know, what an acre was how much one man could cut in one day with a scythe. And now when we look at a lot of the grains, we don't have the ancient grains. For example, have you ever heard of something called einkorn?
Yes, but I don't know what it is.
It's a wheat. It's a type of ancient wheat is what it is. And that's the wheat that our ancestors would have had. And when you make bread with einkorn, it's tastes totally different than it does if you use, you know, Lily's or whatever brand of white flour that you could find out there.
Yeah.
And it's so much better. I think that's part of the problem. The other problem is that we are specifically growing foods that are commercialized. In other words, when you go to the grocery store and you look at the beets, they all look the same. When I grow beets outside in my garden, they don't all look the same.
Nah.
They taste a lot better. We've lost a lot of the varieties. Just look at tomatoes, for example. There's thousands of varieties of tomatoes. That is one thing that I can say in the South that we've actually been able to maintain is a lot of the diversity in our tomatoes. So, like, we can get things like Cherokee purples and black tomatoes and, you know, fried green tomatoes or something that's on the menu here. But if you go to the grocery store, you get basically two types of tomatoes, just like lettuce. There's thousands of varieties of lettuce, and why do we really only have Romaine and iceberg lettuce? They're the least nutritious of all the lettuce because they grow uniform, and they also look very nice on the shelf as well.
Yeah. You know, people have been watching my show. I talk about I love growing tomatoes. It's like one of my biggest rituals that I do. Unfortunately, I didn't grow a garden this year, but I had some tomatoes in some pots and stuff like that. But one of my rituals that I do every single year, and this is just a little something special for me, but it's a spiritual thing for me. It's great. I grow my tomatoes, and the first tomato that I grow, I go out there barefoot, and the first one that I pluck, I have a little bit of salt, and I put a little salt on it, I take a bite on it fresh outside, barefoot. Sometimes it's raining, sometimes it's dark, and that taste of the fresh tomato off the plant is out of this world. It's incredible. And I tell people all the time, it's like, man, these tomatoes you get in the store, first of all, a lot of time they're grown in South America. They're picked when they're not ripe. They're green. And they put gas in the truck on the way up.
So, so they ripen on the way.
That's why the tomatoes you buy at the store are all hard. And then they put wax on them, all kinds of weird stuff. No, when you grow like a big boy or a beefsteak or whatever kind of tomato you're growing, that is going to be a big, lumpy, ugly tomato. And the skin's going to be real thin. And you cut it, and it almost falls apart. But let me tell you, you put that thing on a sandwich, it's off the chain, dude. It's incredible because it has so much more flavor than these store-bought tomatoes that are just like these hard, like softballs, and they just taste like bland water. That's not what a tomato tastes like. Grow your own tomatoes, man. Grow them and learn how to can, too. Can them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another skill that we've lost. And, you know, how do we preserve these foods? How can we take our bounty from the gardens? And that's one thing that I advocate. You know, back during World War II, our government, which is shocking to me because I think our government's a large problem in our food supply, but our government actually said go out and grow something called a victory garden because they realized that food was going to become scarce. You know, you needed food to feed the troops, right? So a lot of the quote-unquote commercial stuff was going to feed the troops. How do you feed the domestic population? Well, in America, we're blessed with so much land. And I go up and down the roads here. I live in the Appalachian Mountains, and I see all these abandoned farms, all this land that is being developed into shopping centers or whatnot. No one's growing food. I grow about an acre garden a year. And you would be shocked at how much vegetables and how much I procure off this. And like I said, I have a 9-to-5 job. Yes.
That's crazy, man. I have a pretty small garden. My garden's probably 10 by 20, maybe. And I have tomatoes coming out of the ears. When I lived in, the last place that I lived at, I had a garden that was 30 by 60. I had so much vegetables and stuff, I couldn't give it away. Like, I had stuff going bad in the garden. I had nowhere to go with it. I couldn't, we couldn't eat it all. I didn't know enough people to give it away. Dude, man, a 10 by 20 garden, people say, oh, I don't have enough space. Man, a 5 by 5, it doesn't matter. If you have 3 tomato plants or, two pepper plants or whatever, an eggplant, cucumber, zucchini, whatever you got, let me tell you, dude, it's going to come up with so much produce. You're going to save so much money at the grocery store just by doing this and canning it. It lasts for so long. Like, if you go to, like, up here in PA, if you go to, like, some sort of Amish mart or something like that, there's so much, like, you see it in jars. Like, we got the pickled vegetables. You got the pickled green beans. You got, like, all this stuff, the canned tomatoes. That stuff lasts for a long, long time. These people have been doing this for so much. That's why the Amish have so much money, because they can everything. They say, that's how it is. It's such a wonderful, tremendous practice, and it gets us off the screens and gets us doing something, getting in touch with the earth. And this is another thing, man, getting in touch with your odal. Man, I do so many shows talking about the odal and stuff like that. Man, if you get in touch with your odal, which is like your tradition, your ancestral tradition, or something that you have a connection with. And I tell the story all the time about how a friend of mine went to Greece, and when he was over in Greece, he was really shocked. Well, it wasn't Greece, it was Crete. He went to Crete.
Okay.
And there's these families that had these properties that they've had in the family forever. We're talking since ancient Greece times that these people have been living on these properties. And they grow these olive plants. And these olive plants, they've been taking care of them. And because of how olives grow, they never really die. They're like an eternal perennial. So these people have been procuring and eating from these olive plants for longer than, like, 5-10 times longer than America's been a country. It's like that's such a beautiful thing. We don't have that anymore.
No, we don't. And, I'll tell a little story about my great-grandparents. My great-grandparents grew up in very rural Appalachia. They didn't even have indoor plumbing until around 1980, something like that. They lived into their 80s. They lived off the land. And when I mean lived off the land, when you went into their basement, it was just rows and rows and rows of green beans and, you know, whatever that they were canning, right? You also look at the way that they lived, and they didn't go to a grocery store. They went to the grocery store, and I'm not exaggerating, twice a year. And you know what they bought at the grocery store? Sugar. That's because they made liquor. So it was one thing, you know, it was just something like, hey, we can't procure enough beets to make enough sugar to, you know, make the liquor and things like that. So, you know, just looking at the way that they were able to live, you can actually live off the land. And what cracks me up so much about our modern society is that the average American probably has at least a quarter acre of a yard, and they go outside and they go to Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever big box store. They buy hundreds of dollars worth of grass seed, and they go out there and they, you know, throw fertilizer on it and all that stuff. Screw that. I don't do any of that. My yard, I could care less. Mostly what I do with my yard is when I mow it, I bag it to make compost and mulch with. My front yard has several apple trees in it, various fruit trees. And the other thing, too, is the wonderful thing about fruit trees, back to hunting, you grow enough apples, guess what? The deer are coming in. And then there's your secondary food supply. So you get some apples, then you get to shoot some deer as well. So it really is about, you know, what can you do with your land? And I hear so many people say, well, I don't have enough land to do what you're doing, or, you know, I don't have enough time. That time thing is the one that, honestly, it really kind of pisses me off, because, yes, you do have time. How much time did you spend watching TV? Or how much time did you spend goofing off or playing with your cell phone? Disconnect. Go out into nature and plant some trees. You know, go out and learn these kind of skills. And it's not hard. It really isn't. You really should be going through and looking at, you know, what land do you have? Maybe you only have a quarter acre. You'd be shocked at what you can grow on a quarter acre. I mean, you really would be. Just to give you an example, just this year we brought in over 200 pounds of garlic.
Wow.
Just garlic. So, I mean, we're swimming to this day in garlic and shallots and things like that. Yes, I did raise a lot of it for seed because I'm wanting to, you know, get some special varieties, you know, a lot of the hard necks and soft necks, and I do raise some elephant ear and various types of garlic. But garlic is one of the most simple things on earth to grow. All you do is till the soil up, add some compost, some crap, you know, whatever you got laying around, some yard clippings, and cut the bulb, put it in the dirt. That's it. Come back, 8 months later, you got garlic. You don't have to do anything to it.
And garlic is not cheap in the store.
No, it's not, especially if you want some of these specialty garlics. And that's why I grew so much, is because I wanted to make sure that I had enough seed garlic for the next year. So, yeah, when you're looking at some of these, you know, higher-end garlics and stuff like that, they're very expensive in the store. And it's one of the simplest things to grow, especially in the region I live in. You do need some overwintering and some cool temperatures to get those roots going and things like that. But, I mean, it's super simple. I tell people, if they're wanting to start a garden, start simple. You don't have to be, you know, self-sufficient a year. Just start simple. Just get somewhere, you know, just start very simple.
Yeah. If you're just starting, man, tomatoes, hot peppers, bell peppers, zucchini, eggplant, cantaloupes. Like, those are the kind of things, like, you could just, like, use, I mean, obviously, you got to water it, and you got to weed it, and you got to take some care of it, but they're not, you know, they're not fragile plants. Those things grow wild. They go nuts, especially depend and also you experiment with what your soil is. Because I've like the last place I lived at, I didn't have any sort of luck with like zucchinis, but green beans were nuts. Here, yeah. Where I'm living, you know, green beans are kind of like nothing, but zucchinis grow like nuts. I have a jungle of zucchinis. So experiment with what your soil is good with.
You know, another thing that I really want to get our folk to realize is that buy some land, you know, get some land, even if it takes you several years to be able to save up for this, get some land, because the land can work for you and you can procure food from this land. And really, in all honesty, when you look at the biggest expense that we have as a society, it's food.
Yeah.
So just the average cost, I think I wrote it down here, the average family of four spends up to $1,200 a month in food. Imagine if you could just cut that grocery bill in half. That's $600 that you'd have extra. What can you do with $600 extra a month?
You could do a lot with $600.
Exactly. And this is something that, you know, I really want people to realize, yes, it is a little bit extra work, but what were you doing with your time anyway? Watching TV? You're not accomplishing anything by watching TV.
No, you're filling your head with poison and you're not getting any exercise. And, you know, there's no reason not to start getting into at least having a small garden. Man, I tell people all the time, man, I had an apartment when I was a young man. When I first met my wife, I had an apartment. I had tomato plants on the balcony of my apartment. I had a little 2-bedroom apartment with like a little crappy balcony. I had pots with tomato plants in them. So I don't care how much space you have. And I actually did a show with my buddy Sig, and he's like really big into permaculture and like technology and stuff like that. And he's talking about, you know, there's vertical farming, you can get aeroponics, there's like all kinds of stuff. You could have zero land. You could just literally live in a studio apartment and still grow something. You know what I mean? Or even herbs in your windowsill.
There's really no excuse for not growing anything. It's really laziness, to be quite honest with you. Unless you live in a prison cell, there's really no excuse. Even people that live on apartments, like you said, they can actually just, you know, take a couple of pots, put them outside, grow some tomatoes, some hot peppers, various things like that. And, you know, at least have something. A lot of times in cities, I used to live in Baltimore, and they would have little community gardens. And what was so funny is nobody used them. You know, they were just out there. Maybe there was like one or two hippies out there. So even if you live in a city, there's probably community gardens that you can go into and, you know, grow food. And it just shocks me how little interest there is in something you do every day. And this was sacred to our people, by the way. Like I said, it's really nice to romanticize about the combat or the lore or the esoteric parts of, you know, our religion and stuff like that. But the one thing that our ancestors did more than anything was procure food. That was the most pivotal thing that they did all through their day. The other thing, too, that our ancestors were very keen on, if you look at some of their diets, and there's some research out there, they were eating close to, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 calories a day. You know why? They burned that much. And it was a healthy lifestyle for them. You know, if I ate 6,000 calories a day, I would be Jabba the Hutt. Yeah. I mean, it's true.
Yeah, it is true. That's speaking of like cultural things carrying over. Here in the United States, we very much still eat a frontiersman's diet. You know, the folks came over here, they had to eat a lot of calories because they were working sun up to sun down, and you know, it was crazy lifestyle, building and hunting and working in the coal mines. If you're from Appalachia like we are, you know, it was a hard life, and they ate a lot. So they woke up and they ate the flapjacks and the sausage and the bacon and the eggs. And then for lunchtime, they would have these big giant sandwiches or oatmeal or whatever. And then dinner time, they have a big giant roast. And throughout the whole day, they're snacking and eating or whatever. We don't have that lifestyle anymore. No. Sorry, guys. We're not working in the coal mines. You don't need to eat 5,000 calories a day. So, but we still have that lifestyle because they became comfort foods. You know, like, you know, you have your pancakes, your waffles, like all that stuff. The American diet is very much a carrier. I mean, as you said, it's very commercialized. It's very much based on consumerism and, you know, garbage crony capitalism. I don't want to get into all that, but that's what it's based on. That's what it comes from. And it's not only is it a diet that's no longer good for us because we don't have as much of an active lifestyle, but it's also full of chemicals and garbage. And we are obligated to opt out. Like, it's like we have to.
Yeah, the other thing too, I mean, you kind of hit on that, and I don't want to go down that political road, but when you look at the environmental impact that monocropping is doing to our society, it's unbelievable. Monocropping is one of the worst things that's ever happened to our society, where they just grow soybeans or they just grow one crop.
Corn.
Because corn's one of the worst, right? No one in their right mind needs as much corn as we grow in the United States. It's just absolutely asinine. And we subsidize this, which to me is just the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then they try to figure out different ways of utilizing this corn, like ethanol. Mm. You know, I mean, yeah, maybe my great-great-grandparents turned some of that corn into liquor. But, you know, how much liquor can we drink in this country? You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't need that much corn. And now our government has to subsidize these farmers to grow things, and then they're spraying, you know, pesticides and herbicides and various things on this. Well, that all eventually makes its way into our rivers, into our groundwater. And guess what? We get to drink it. And then, you know, if the deer drink it, then we get to eat that. It's just a terrible situation. I do not use any pesticides or herbicides on my garden. And yes, I do occasionally lose, you know, let's say, you know, I think this year, I lost a lot of tomato plants to some worms and stuff like that, but everything else thrived. And you know what? That's fine with me. We put out about 120 tomato plants this year. We were swimming in tomatoes, even though we lost about half the crop, and that's fine with me. I don't have a problem with that, but I know I didn't pollute the environment around me. I know that I didn't put anything terrible into the soil.
No Roundup,
none of that nonsense. When you utilize nature, you don't need to spray it with chemicals and pesticides and herbicides. That's another thing it's destroying us. And not to get kind of on a political rant, but when we talk about so much like global warming and all this stuff like that, I'm like, hey, you know, guess what? We're pumping all these chemicals into the soil and nobody's even talking about it, because that's the machine. That's the industry. To me, real environmentalism would be making sure that our deer herd is healthy, making sure that there is not chemicals in our water and our food, making sure that we're not spraying toxic crap all over the place. That's what I think of as environmentalism. And, you know, people think that, you know, now environmentalism is the tailpipe of your car, and it's really sad.
Yeah. It's really bad. It's really bad. Yeah, environmentalism, man. I did a whole video called Anus Worship is All Devouring. And I go, you mentioned lawns. There's a meme going around. I got memed because I said that having a lawn is anus worship. Because it kind of is. It kind of is. Because, you know, our ancestors would have found it ridiculous to have a nice little Home and Gardens magazine looking plastic yard. Would have been. I had a neighbor one time. All he did all day was trim his lawn, fertilize his lawn. He had these evergreen trees that when they got too big, he would rip them out and then plant new smaller ones. And it's like, that's the most anus worship thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And if you look at the source of where this came from, it is not from our ancestors. What it came from was our ancestors, not necessarily all of our ancestors, but some of our ancestors were tricked into idolizing these 1% royal families and banker families like the Rothschilds and stuff, who pretty much all they were doing is just showing off how much property they had and would have these like perfect little lawns. So, you know, we brought that to the United States when we, you know, when we came over, and, you know, the White House lawn and all that stuff, just to, like, flex and show how much property you have. So now it translates to middle-class Joe Schmo, who's only got you know, a quarter acre of land, is not utilizing it and turning it into a goofy lawn, LARPing as some sort of 1% filthy, ugly, rich guy, when in fact he should be using that property for growing fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a quarter acre, let's just say you had a quarter acre lot, you know, you could probably put 15 apple trees, 10 peach trees. I mean, depending on your environment, maybe a peach tree doesn't work there, but you could put a lot of fruit trees on that. And like I said before, you'll attract some wildlife, and all you got to do is just sit out there and shoot the wildlife. Now you've procured meat, now you've got some vegetables as well. And honestly, fruit trees are one of the easiest things on earth to grow. I mean, you plant them, you mulch them, and you come back and you pick the fruit. It's really that simple. So, you know, the best thing that I can tell people to do with their lawn is not to fertilize it. Don't do anything with it. Put a bagger on your mower, collect all the grass clippings, throw it in a pile, and make compost out of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And this whole, like, suburbia hellscape, you know, prim and proper lawn thing, it's just modernist garbage. It's meaningless modernist garbage, and our ancestors would have thought it was ridiculous. They would have been shocked that we're wasting land like that.
Well, just look at all the golf courses out there, and this is a boomer issue, right? I mean, to be quite honest with you, this is a boomer issue. What are we going to do with all those golf courses when the boomers are gone?
Who knows? Probably grow corn.
Probably, unfortunately, or make disc golf courses for the hippies. I don't know. But, you know, my idea that is that, you know, why not make, you know, huge orchards again, or make, you know, fertile grounds that we can sow food plots to hunt on, you know? The average golf course is, what, probably 30, 40, 50 acres, something like that?
Crazy.
That's a lot of land. And, yeah, if you were to till up, you know, let's just say the greens and plant clover there, man, you'll have deer out the wazoo. You really will.
So we are coming up on our time, but I wanted to ask you about one more thing, and that is, so now that we kind of covered that we need to get away from all of these things and what things are bad for us, and what would be a more proper way of procuring our meat and our food, and how we need to get back to nature and all that, what are maybe some recipes that we could make with what we have today that would be similar to what our ancestors ate?
Yeah, I mean, so our ancestors, like I said before, and there's various things throughout our lore that talks about a cauldron, right? I'm sure everyone can imagine, like just even the scenario, if you wanted to go with the Christian idea of it, like the witch with this big cauldron, right? Well, what they actually did with this cauldron is they, you know, they cooked the meat, and then they threw the bones into it with some vegetables, and they kept this thing going all week. And this right here is probably the easiest thing that you can do. When you take stuff like bone broth and you just add it to something as simple as your rice or your potatoes or any vegetables that you're cooking or anything else, it gives it such a better flavor. So that's one of the simplest things that you can do, is buy the whole animal, with the whole animal, then take it into a stock pot, keep that stock pot going all week. And, you know, I'd be more than happy to, you know, film that. Like I said, I've got one rolling, you know, pretty much all through the week, and, you know, just show you how you can start off with, you know, a chicken one day, and then the beef, you know, when you get the beef bones, throw that in there and just keep this stock pot going. The nutritional value of what's in that stock pot is amazing, because you're just continually adding to it, whether it's vegetables, whether it's mushrooms, various things, and it gives it a better flavor. It gives all the food a better flavor, and it's super nutritious for you.
And when I do my stock, I'm saving ends that I cut. You know, when you cut your onion, you cut the little ends off and you throw them in the garbage. Keep that. Keep
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
Keep the stems from the mushrooms. Keep all of that stuff, the bones, any piece of the animal. Like if you get a rotisserie chicken or something, like the bones are still good. Though, the little tiny pieces of meat that are in along the spine that you always just throw out because it's too much trouble, throw that in the stock pot, man. It's going to be delicious.
Even the scrapes. I don't know if you... Do you know what scrapes are off of the garlic? The thing that comes up out and curls up? It's perfect. Eat that. There's nothing wrong with it. Throw that in there.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with... Man, Let me tell you, like, when I started to like really learn about this kind of stuff, I look back at all the, like, how I've been cooking and how I've been procuring things and how I've been preparing food for so many years, and I feel ashamed of all of the stuff that I threw out that's perfectly good. You know, for example, let me tell you guys something. So if you work in like this, if you go to like a seafood place, or if you go to a restaurant, or even people that make scallops at home, them little like the they call it the tongue, the scallop, man, that thing is, that's delicious. You can put that and make a seafood chowder out of that. People just throw that out all the time. I mean, we mentioned chicken hearts earlier. Everything, man.
Or even the bones off the fish. Most people are like, what do I do with the bones of the fish? It goes in the stock pot. You know? I mean, fish stock. I mean, it's perfectly good. It's healthy for you. That's another thing, too. I mean, just to kind of add to that with fish, our bodies are really lacking iodine. Our soils are depleted from iodine. We know for a fact there's scientific evidence to suggest that, you know, iodine is linked to IQ. And it comes from the fact that we don't get enough iodine in our diets because, like I said before, our soils are depleted from it. One of the best sources of iodine is seafood and fish. Yeah, throw that thing in a stock pot.
Shout out to my buddy Dino, who's he just sent me some iodine. He's like a really, really big fan of getting people to supplement their diets with iodine.
Yeah, I mean, and like I'm not a dietitian or anything like that. I don't even work in any kind of, you know, field like that or whatever. But iodine is unbelievable. If you don't know much about iodine, do your research on iodine. It's amazing. Our government at one time put iodine in things like salt, various things they would fortify with iodine. We know for a fact that iodine is linked to IQ. It's linked to various diseases and things like that. And it's one thing that, you know, we need in our body. And unfortunately, where I live, the only source of iodine that I know of is actually in fish. And that's just it. So if you were going to live off the land here, the only chance that you have for iodine is fish. The sea is probably an 8-hour drive from me. So it wasn't like my great grandparents got a chance to go to the ocean every once in a while. So fish, like I said, should be part of your diet. And there's nowhere in the United States that I know of, maybe Arizona or somewhere, you know, that's desertous, but there's nowhere in the United States that doesn't have trout, bass, something. Catfish even, you know, iodine is something that we really need to bring back into our diet. And there's not a lot of good sources for it in the mountains, unfortunately, but fish is one of them.
Very cool. All right, Mr. Farmer, we are coming up on our time. Is there anything else you'd like to conclude with?
I guess in conclusion of this is I really want to encourage everyone in our folk to, you know, think about their diet. It's something that our ancestors thought about every day. It was life and death to them. For us, you know, it's just going to the grocery store, and we really should give more reverence to our diet. Our ancestors would have killed to be able to go to a grocery store, and we take this for granted. And to me, every time that I cook a nice meal and I cook something big like this, it is sacred to me. It's just like if I was to do a prayer. And, you know, I put a part of my essence into that meal, and I am not the best chef in the world. I try, you know, I look up recipes and, you know, that's kind of my hobby. But I really want to instill into everyone that food is something that can better us all. If we're healthier, if we're leaner, we're better, we're, you know, more agile. All this stuff comes from food. I hate to say it, but I look out a lot of times that, you know, people and I'm like, oh my God, if you've ever been to Walmart, you'll know that this is not a healthy nation. Yeah. And, you know, I am not trying to change their minds. I could care less, but for our folk, I am trying to change their minds. And that's one thing that I want to instill.
That's beautiful. And that is, as you mentioned, is a very big part of our life in devotion to the gods and to our ancestors and to this lifestyle. This isn't just like something you could pick up or whatever. This is a lifestyle that we're, you know, as we opt out of clown world, the wolf age, We want to immerse ourselves in our ancestral primordial path, because this is the path of awakening, enlightenment, and most of all, of healing. We've been going through ages upon ages and generations of pain and suffering and anguish and separation from our true form. So it's time that we come back, and it's the only way that we can see the light and we can approach a new golden age. And I believe that we are going to approach a new golden age, but it is going to take effort. And one of the things that we need to put effort into is ourselves, man. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our families that we have to do these things. And as Mr. Farmer's talking about, one of the things is very, very practical and very simple, and that is what you put into your body. Who was it? One of the Greeks said, "Let food be thy medicine." Right?
Let food be thy medicine, and medicine be my food. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So make sure you do that, man. And if you didn't grow a garden this year, man, you got to get on that garden, man. I want to see everybody. People send me pictures of garden. I've been garden posting for years now, and people have been sending me pictures. And, I never thought about growing a garden. This is other. Yeah, man, dude, get woke, get a garden, get out, go hunting, do all this stuff, get back in touch with nature, get back in touch with yourselves and who you really are, your primordial path, and your ancestral wisdom that is locked within our DNA and our spirits and our blood and all this stuff. It's just weighted. Man, I say this all the time, and it's so true, man. The gods never stop speaking to us. We just forgot how to listen. It's time to remember. And this is one of the ways to unlock that knowledge and that wisdom and get back to a better, more primordial form for us, our folk, and our children. We're going to close it out for tonight, but I'd like to thank Mr. Folkish Farmer, my colleague, for coming on. Wonderful episode. Brilliant man. I appreciate you, sir.
Thank you very much, and have a good night, guys.
Yes, sir. But before we close out, like always, another shout out to my homegirl, Miss Hannah, traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. We're talking about opting out tonight, man. We're talking about opting out of the machine that hates our guts and wants to destroy us. Do so not just with what you ingest in your food and everything like that, but also do so with your body. You know, let me tell you, this is all organic stuff grown from the earth, just like what Mr. Farmer's talking about all night tonight. This is all organic stuff. It's good for your hair, good for your body, good for your skin. You know, we got to become primordial. We got to become shining, wonderful, beautiful creatures with these beautiful features that our ancestors gifted us with. So go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Get some beard oil. Get some shampoo, some conditioner. There's all kinds of great stuff. The lotion is absolutely tremendous. I use lotion now. Like, I mean, you can call me whatever you want, but let me tell you, it feels so good. Face toner, all this stuff. I'm like a traditional apothecary. It's almost turned me into a woman with the amount of stuff that I use. I'm still not a woman, obviously. I'm still a beautiful, shining example of masculinity. No, okay, but just kidding. But anyway, go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. I promise you're going to love it. I use it. My wife uses it. Dr. G uses it.
I was going to say, actually, I've got some beard oil on order from her right now. So I'm
all right.
Looking forward to getting some beard oil myself. Keep this mane going right here.
All right. Yeah. Traditional Apothecary, official beauty products for the folk. Keep your white bright, keep your beard robust, and keep your mane flowing, just like Big Dave, just like Big Dave's family, just like Dr. G, and just like Mr. Folkish Farmer here. But thank you again for coming on tonight, Mr. Farmer. I appreciate you, brother, and I'll see you in the halls of Nirona Society. Go to Nirona.org to check out more. Yeah, like, subscribe, share, so you can click the alert button so you can get alert every time we go live here on The Bog. Tristan was off tonight, but he will be back next week, 9 p.m. Eastern, every single Thursday, The Bog. I'll see you guys next time. Many blessings to you guys, man. Many blessings. Much love to you guys and your wonderful, beautiful families. Hail the gods. Hail the folk. Hail victory. I'll see you guys next week. Hail.
Hail.